This is David Griffith, editor of Police Magazine. As we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11, police is conducting a series of special podcasts with law enforcement officers who experienced that horrible day in person. My first guest is John Adler. John is not only the former president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, FLEOA, he served as director of the Bureau of Justice Assistance from 2017 to 2019. On 9/11, John was Chief Firearms and Tactical Training Officer for the U.S. Attorney's Office, Southern District of New York. His offices were very near the World Trade Center. In the first of three podcasts with John, we will discuss his experiences on 9/11. John, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure, David. Appreciate being here with the Police Magazine audience.
On the morning of September 11, 2001, you were driving from Brooklyn to your offices and were stopped at the Battery Park Tunnel just across from the World Trade Center. What were your experiences at the tunnel?
Mind-boggling, to say the least. I was just finishing up on a quick field stop, and as you said, heading to the Battery Tunnel to cross over into downtown Manhattan. Right on my approaching, coming less than a mile to the tunnel, the South Tower was struck by the first plane commandeered by the terrorists. As I approached the Battery Tunnel, the second tower, the North Tower, was struck as well. It was, let's just say, chaos would undermine the level of frenzy that was taking place there. At the time the planes hit, we didn't know what was going on. It was sort of a psychological transition from maybe the air traffic control was asleep to this is an attack on our homeland.
Yeah. We know from history that a plane had hit the Empire State Building back after World War II. So an accident was a possibility.
It was. And you know, you don't want to be naive while embracing optimism. But, and I say naive, meaning that if it was unintentional, obviously the severity of what's transpiring is lessened. But your sort of mind again transitions from, yeah, it could have been human error, to human evil, which led to the attacks on the towers, as well as the Pentagon and the flight that went down in Shanksville.
What were your experiences inside the tunnel?
I felt like I was somehow dropped into the cast of some apocalypse zombie movie. It was very disheartening to see the civilians trapped within the tunnel in their vehicles, exiting the vehicles, coming to the exit of the tunnel, which we were trying to get them to do to ensure there'd be no secondary explosion. We wanted to make sure that all the vehicles were turned off. And there were vehicles in the tunnel packed when the towers went down. The soot and all of that toxic air flew right into the tunnel, and the civilians exiting the tunnel were covered in, blanketed in that toxic soot. And it just felt as though, again, you were somehow, you know, dropped into some time warp, into some futuristic movie where things go tilt and people were exiting the tunnel in shock, disoriented, understandably. And we were trying to escort them away, as far away from the tunnel as possible. We obviously didn't know if there were going to be secondary or additional attacks, and we wanted to make sure that the tunnel was safe.
How did you get through to the other side of the tunnel?
Ultimately, when we evacuated everyone from the tunnel and both towers had gone down, I think it was a little bit after 10:30 a.m., I had gotten on board an EMS, or emergency medical service vehicle, and went across the outbound lane of the Battery Tunnel right into downtown Manhattan, a couple of blocks from the impacted grounds.
And what did you see at that point?
Well, interesting question, David. You didn't see much. You saw everything and you saw nothing at the same time. And what I mean is, your visibility was so impacted by the smoke and everything, the debris, the toxins in the air, you didn't have clear visibility beyond 6 feet in front of you. And, you know, you sort of instinctively, all those other senses of the, or senses of the body and the mind, were registering mayhem, but you couldn't really see the totality of the damage because of the smoke. And as I walked in the direction of where the towers were, there were people who were just evacuated in time, sort of walking in my direction, similar, or if not more impacted than the civilians exiting the Battery Park Tunnel. And they too were in shock, covered in debris, disoriented, and just what you might expect, if in fact you can expect something that severe, in terms of just not knowing what happened and walking with a gait that could only be, you know, sort of reminiscent, or not reminiscent, but similar to what you might see in sort of, again, one of these zombie apocalypse movies.
Could you do anything to help those people?
It's, you know, David, in my mind at the time, I'm trying to process what's going on. The phones were really, the cell phones were of no use. I had one phone call after the first tower was hit to an investigator in the office. And after that, the phones just weren't operable. So it's sort of processing everything immediately in front of you, as well as sort of transitioning your mind to law enforcement professional, and you have to carry out your primary mission. And as I was walking to the grounds and people were coming toward me, I was trying to assist anyone within arm's reach, get them oriented, tell them it's okay, guide them in what I thought was the safest direction, which was obviously away from the grounds, and told them to just keep walking. I'd ask them where they live and give them the best, you know, best direction in terms of how to move away from the targeted area. But at the same time, my mind directed me. I realized I had to get back to the U.S. Attorney's Office and make sure that everything that needed to be protected and accounted for was. And so I ultimately proceeded to the U.S. Attorney's Office, which was approximately 8 blocks away from the impacted grounds, to join my other fellow criminal investigators and the court security officers there, and sort of protecting the building, protecting the United States attorney, and accounting for all personnel.
When did you return to the World Trade Center site?
After we were sort of confident the building was secure, the court security offices are, these guys are outstanding. The primary concerns were being addressed. We escorted the United States attorney to the command post so she could meet with law enforcement assets to further assess what transpired and what the appropriate measures needed to be in response. My partner and I went back down to the grounds probably a couple of hours after ensuring that everything at the office, the assets and personnel, were protected and accounted for. And at that point, we walked back down to the grounds.
I've talked to a number of officers about the emotions they experienced in the immediate aftermath of the attack. And what were you feeling that afternoon when you returned to the site?
Interesting cocktail of emotions. It went initially from shock, a little disoriented, to police-minded, investigative, first responder, but also a growing amount of anger. And as I processed what transpired, meaning that we were attacked by terrorists, the anger magnetometer went up. And I was concerned, you know, one thing I didn't mention, when I came across the Battery Park Tunnel and I sort of got a very loose sense of what transpired, the towers went down. One of my friends served in a task force, which was situated in 6 World Trade, one of the smaller buildings on the grounds. And as I walked back to my office, my heart had pretty much a black hole, thinking that my friend was killed in the attack, and trying to reconcile the fact that you probably lost friends who you've worked with, and at the same time, keep your mind full and gear on what the mission at hand is, was challenging. So there were a lot of emotions sort of consuming, I guess, what do you call that? A twister or a hurricane, a hurricane of all sorts of feelings brewing up as you try to, you know, remain professional and carry out your mission.
And how long were you at the site that night?
I was there along with my partner until I'd say maybe 3 o'clock in the morning.
What were your partner's reaction to the to what you were dealing with?
Well, interesting. You know, David, when we returned back to the grounds, everyone, you know, the law enforcement personnel, the firefighters, you know, we all had a fierce determination to try and rescue or save someone or something. We, you know, we're not the types to lay on our back and be pinned with a smile. And we wanted to sort of put our heart and minds into rescuing anyone who might have survived, even though there was a growing doubt that no one did. And, you know, one thing struck in my memory when we returned to the grounds, we saw a pigeon that was on its side covered in soot. And my partner, Ron, picked up the pigeon, carried it over to the fire hydrant, which was open, cleaned them off, set him straight on his feet so the pigeon would be able to, I guess, eventually get away from the scene and survive. And someone had asked him, sort of half joking, hey, you know, what are you doing? Why are you bothering with that pigeon? And Ron's response was, hey, this is our pigeon. And in effect, no one attacks our pigeons. And it's just interesting how, you know, we normally don't think highly of pigeons in New York, yet in this particular instance, you know, our anger, our indignation over being attacked sort of extended to protecting pigeons as well as human life. But it also, again, goes towards our sort of innate desire to rescue and save life.
And no one was recovered at that time, right?
No, you know, David, we heard at various intervals what I would describe as phantom sounds or phantom voices. You know, I think it's sort of maybe wishful thinking, but we would sort of stop for a second. Someone would say, did you hear that? Hear what? I think I heard someone. And then we would all sort of convene on where the voice or the sound came from, climbing up on the girders, with decreasing visibility as it got later, and sort of trying not to fall in between the girders and become a casualty, but at the same token, trying to locate if in fact there was a voice or a sound, you know, the person connected to it so we could save them. And, you know, hearing those phantom voices occurred, you know, throughout the remainder of the day into the evening, but unfortunately, we didn't find anyone.
Thank you, John. John will talk about the aftermath of 9/11 in our next podcast.